is Histories and Mysteries Uncovered. I'm Ashley.
And I'm Jessica. And on this week's episode, Ashley will be talking about Jennifer Wilbanks, and I will be talking about Aamo Koivunen.
Wow. What language is that?
Aamo Koivunen. I've listened to the pronunciation like 10 times and I can't wrap my head around it. He's Finnish, I think.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah. But it's a wild ride.
Is it?
Oh, yeah.
I'm excited.
Yeah. I was researching last night and I was giggling.
She messaged me last night and she was like, it's wild.
Yeah. Not a lot on them, but it's insane. And I just wanted to tell it. So
I'm very excited.
It's fun.
Mine is interesting, too. And I think once we get to a certain point, you'll know the story.
Really?
Yeah.
Are you sure? I live under a true crime rock.
So. That's true. That's true. Well,
I didn't even know much about Gypsy.
Okay. Well, maybe when I get to a certain point, our listeners will know this story.
That checks out more than me.
Which, by the way, we are popping off on YouTube.
I was just about to say that. Thank you for all of our new YouTube subscribers. Yeah. Holy cow.
You guys rock.
You guys are amazing, and I like the positive contributions. The positive comments are amazing to see, so thank you. Yes,
they are great. And the negative ones are fine as well. But you know what they say, Jessica? You haven't made it till you have haters.
It's accurate. Guess I've been making it my whole life.
Oh, no. Well, everybody loves me, so I can't relate.
Yeah, I know.
I'm just kidding. I am a people pleaser, but there are people that don't like me, surprisingly.
Surprise, surprise.
So I got my information from Denver Post, People Magazine, an interview by Katie Couric on NBC News, and Business Insider.
You're right. I totally know this story already.
Perfect. All right. It was spring of 2005 in the suburbs of Atlanta, Georgia. Jennifer Wilbanks and John Mason were getting ready to tie the knot on April 30th. They had their venue picked out, their colors chosen, their food and cake was ordered, and their 28-person bridal party.
Holy guacamole. Okay.
We're getting excited.
I had one person. No, sorry. Technically two people, because my husband had one. I had one in our wedding party.
I had four.
Yeah.
Yeah, four. I had four. See,
and that seems reasonable.
Yeah, I feel like four is reasonable. 14 per side is what they had.
That's so 28 horrifying. Total. How do you know that many people?
Right? Especially because they were a bit older when they got married. So she was born in either 78 or 73. I can't remember. So, I mean, they were a bit older when they got married. And I feel like, how do you have that many friends when you're a little bit older?
Yeah, honestly. And I mean, just have them at the wedding.
Yeah.
Like, who are you going to have out in the fucking crowd?
Oh, don't worry. They had 600 guests coming.
How do you know that many people?
So anyway, this was a big wedding, to say
the least. I had a huge family, and I don't even think we have that many people.
Yeah, it was a huge wedding. And they were extra excited because they had waited until marriage to sleep together.
Oh, I'm sure they had.
Well, that's what they said. She also had 8 different bridal showers.
Holy guacamole. How old is this person?
So she was born in 70. I can't remember if it was 73 or 78. Let me look real quick. 73. So 83, 93, 03. So she was 32. At this point.
Okay. Yeah, waited quite a bit.
Yeah. And, you know, but still, again, when you're in your 30s, how do you know that many people?
Yeah.
I know like four people.
Might have been from her sorority or.
Maybe. I don't know.
You people are weird about that. So.
By you people, you mean Americans?
You Americans in sororities.
Hey, I was in a sorority.
I know. Hence.
Anyway, everyone was excited and ready to celebrate the love that Jennifer and Jason had. But the excitement would soon turn into a nightmare. On April 26th, 4 days before the couple would say I do, Jennifer decided to go for a night run around 8:30 p.m. and disappeared.
Oh, no. I thought, okay.
John was so worried. He started driving around looking in ditches. He thought that, you know, oh, maybe she like twisted her ankle and fell, or like, you know, hurt herself somehow and was like laying in a ditch, or, you know, absolutely worse. Maybe she was assaulted and is laying somewhere. So he's looking everywhere for her and he found no trace. Eventually he headed home, hoping maybe she had gone back home, but she didn't. At around midnight, John called the police to report her missing. And the next morning, John and Jennifer's house was packed with friends, families, neighbors, people from the community, all trying to help find Jennifer. There was about 250 people out searching for her. They started making flyers, posting them all over, asking around if anybody had seen her, anybody had seen anything suspicious. And the city spent between $40,000 and $60,000 searching for Jennifer. They said that they received a ton of evidence, such as large clumps of brown hair, the color of Jennifer's hair, tons of different clothing, and even alleged murder weapons, but none of them turned out to be true or accurate. So 2 days after Jennifer went missing, the police had nothing. No one had seen Jennifer and they hit a dead end. So they decided to call in the FBI and the GBI, which is the Georgia Bureau of Investigation, to help with the case.
I don't know. For some reason, when you tell me the name of a story, I felt like she was going to be the bad guy.
Good thing you didn't say anything bad.
Why?
Like if you said something bad, thinking she was going to be the bad guy and said something bad and she's the one that was actually.
Yeah. I don't know. For some reason, I felt like she was going to be the.
Gotcha.
The shock factor, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So obviously the first place the FBI wanted to look was the fiance. They always look to the husband and the fiance first, right? In the middle of the search headquarters, their house, the FBI comes in and tells John that they need to ask him some questions. Just 3 years prior, the whole Lacey Peterson case had happened, and that had gripped the nation. And police were worried that maybe they had another case like that on their hands. Which, side note, did you know that Scott Peterson was just picked up by the Innocence Project?
I was just about to say that I also don't know what the Lacey Peterson case is.
Basically, Lacey went missing and she was found. Her body was found and she was pregnant. They found the body of the baby, too. And they convicted the husband, but it's always been kind of questionable. I mean, Scott Peterson's a shitbag. Like, he's an asshole, but it's always been kind of questionable if he was the one that murdered her or not. So the Innocence Project picked up his case, though.
That's cool.
Yeah, very interesting. So I'll be anxious to see how that plays out and what kind of evidence they have. But at this point, national news stations picked up the story of Jennifer. And it went 2005's version of viral. People were enthralled with the case. Meanwhile, John and family and friends were still searching. They were making pleas for any information, but the FBI were still focused on John. They pressured him to take a lie detector test. So John immediately spoke to his lawyer, and his lawyer was like, nah. He's like, we will take a private lie detector test, and then we'll tell police about it.
Of course you will. But is this, like, is this solved?
Yes.
Okay. Was it John?
I don't know. We'll find out when we get there.
Well, you're going to tell me anyways.
Keep your pants on, lady.
I took them off already, so I can't.
But before he could even go and do his own lie detector test, on April 30th, the day that would have been their wedding, John's house received a phone call. Jennifer's stepdad answered, and on the other end was a sobbing Jennifer. She said, "Where's John? Where's John?" When her stepdad realized who it was, he started to scream, you know, with excitement and joy. Jennifer was alive.
Oh, wow.
He said, "You don't know how many people are out there looking for you. You don't know, you know what? This has been a national search." When John got to the phone, he said, "Baby, where are you?" And through sobs, Jennifer said, "I don't know." Jennifer went on to tell them that a Hispanic man and a Caucasian woman had kidnapped her in Duluth. Her stepdad told her to call the local police and report the crime. And so she did. And police came and picked her up and, you know, brought her to the station to ask her questions about what had happened to her. And she told them that she was forced into a blue van and she was raped. But the more she told her story to police, the more cracks they found in it. Until finally, one of the detectives said, "We can stop looking for that van, right?" Like basically saying, "You're lying."
Yeah.
And Jennifer said, "Yes."
Jennifer. She's, well, I could have said bad things.
You could have, yeah.
Jennifer.
She said she was so stressed and overwhelmed that she had decided to run away. And this plan wasn't a spur of the moment. She had been thinking about it for a while. 11 days before the wedding, Jennifer snuck away and bought a Greyhound bus ticket good for 1 week. And for the next few days, she went back and forth trying to decide what to do. She said that there wasn't this like one moment that made her decide just to go. It was kind of a bunch of things. And she said the night that she was going for a run, she just decided and she grabbed a taxi and went to the Greyhound bus station. She took scissors with her and cut off her hair, like not all of it, but, you know, cut it off into like a short kind of bob cut. And took $140 with her. She said she finally decided on her destination, Austin, Texas, because a few days earlier, she had watched a documentary featuring Matthew McConaughey, and they had talked about Austin. And this next part doesn't really make sense to me, but she said when she got to Dallas, she said she was afraid to be out alone at night, so she bought another overnight ticket to Las Vegas. I don't know. So I guess she didn't want to be alone in the city and was like, "I'll just get back on the bus." She said, quote, "It hurt me so bad to think that. And because it hurt so bad, it made it harder for me to think about going back because I knew obviously how hurt they were going to be when she was asked about, you know, your family's hurt. Did you think about that?"
Yeah, just call the wedding off. Why do you have to run away? It's like these people that are, they get mad because their mistresses are pregnant and then they kill them.
Right.
Like, just leave.
Just call it off.
Just leave. Why do you have to hurt so many people?
Yeah. Using the last of her money, she bought one more ticket to New Mexico, where some sources said she was going to visit an ex-boyfriend who lived there, but she denies the rumor. And I couldn't find anything more on it, so I think it was just that, a rumor. Yeah. As she wandered around Albuquerque, she finally came to 7-Eleven with a payphone, and that's when she made the call home. Obviously, this made huge news, and everybody started to call her the runaway bride. Have you heard of that, Jessica, the runaway bride?
I've heard of the movie, yeah.
Okay.
I've never seen it.
Yeah, and I think...
And I mean, it also seems like fairly straightforward. The bride ran away.
Yeah, but that's what she was known as in the news, you know, runaway bride. Well, she said... Yeah. She said, again, quote, "I was terrified. I was humiliated. Hence, that's why I kept my face covered. And quite frankly, I didn't want to face them. I didn't want to. I was so ashamed. I just wanted to run away again, you know. And if I could have gotten away, I probably would have." She eventually went back to her parents and hid in their basement. She said, and it was that during that time that I knew I was going to, I needed help and I was going to have to absolutely get help. I couldn't fight these battles anymore by myself. So the battles that she's talking about, when she was younger, she kind of shoplifted quite a bit. In 1990, so she was only about 17, she was arrested twice for shoplifting and once for theft, but like it was $37 at Walmart. And then $1,740 from a mall and then $98 from another store. She ended up, she ended up spending a couple weeks in jail, but she said it was a cry for help and some of the issues she needed help with. In the interview that I read the transcript to, Katie Couric asked her, I guess the question everybody wants to know the answer to is a very simple one. Why?
Yeah.
And she said,
"Tell me why. Tell me why.
Ain't nothing but a heartache." Anyway, she said, "Honestly, I wish you could. I could give you and everybody else that answer because I know that they want to hear it and they deserve to hear that. But I honestly don't know. And this is the part a lot of people don't know. I had a bottle of pills, or I had a bus ticket, and I decided not to play God that day, and decided when." It was time for me to go. So I got on that bus. Were there other alternatives? Sure there were. But that's all I knew at the moment, Katie. And, you know, I'm so ashamed and I feel so guilty for the people that I've hurt and how, you know, how this has affected so many people's lives. But at the same time, it's the best mistake I ever made. It allowed me to realize that I desperately needed help. And that was what I did. And that's what I'm getting now. On May 9th, Jennifer did enter a treatment facility.
Good for her.
And through all of this, John stayed by her side.
Wow.
Katie Couric said, Couric said, "You, meanwhile, John, asked Jennifer to marry you all over again, didn't you? When she came back, I mean, you never wavered in your commitment to her." And he said, "Never even thought twice about it." And she said, "You don't think, whoa, wait a second. My fiance just split on me. There's a wedding planned for 600 people. She's in a Greyhound bus traveling around the country. She's making up this cockamamie story about being kidnapped. You didn't for one second say, hold on, maybe this isn't the right girl for me." And he said, "Not really, no. When she got back, we talked about, all right, what do we do now? I said, well, you got to get some help first and foremost. Maybe we'll get married one day, but we don't know the answer to that question yet." Katie said, "Would you like to? Are you hoping to? Are you very much?" Mason said. And he said, "Well, very much. That's what we want." And then Jennifer said, "We hope to. I just," John said, "yeah." And Katie said, "Maybe just justice of the peace this time." "Right. We'll play it by ear. Yeah." And Jennifer said, "I don't want to give myself to John until I feel like I'm the right person for him. And right now, I don't." But so many resources had been used to find her, and the police and the government were kind of pissed off. So they ended up charging Jennifer with providing false information to law enforcement, which can get you up to 5 years in prison. She ended up pleading guilty after taking a plea deal that gave her 2 years of probation, 120 hours of community service, mandatory mental health counseling, and was ordered to pay the city of Duluth $13,250 and the sheriff's office $2,550. But on May 17th, 2006, almost a year after she ran away, John and Jennifer called off their engagement.
Aww.
But fucking get this.
Oh.
In September of 2006, Jennifer sued John.
Are you kidding me?
No.
Jennifer.
So apparently she gave him power of attorney while she was in the psych hospital. And they had both negotiated a deal with Reagan Media to sell their story for $500,000.
Wish it.
John then took that money and bought a house in Georgia where both John and Jennifer lived for a few months before they split up. And then he, quote, kicked her out, but they split up and she moved. The house was only in his name. So Jennifer didn't get anything from the purchase of their story. So she sued
played the long con.
Which I kind of feel like he deserved it after what she put him through.
Oh, yeah.
So she
sued. He just put her through more emotional turmoil. You know, she worked on herself and then.
Yeah.
Just to end up with nobody.
Well, and it didn't say who broke up with who, but.
Oh.
She sued for half the money made, $250,000, and another $250,000 in punitive damages, saying that John abused the power of attorney. She also wanted some of the wedding gifts the couple had been given and some of the honeymoon money that they had sent aside. Which, excuse me? You fucking ran away, lied, said you were kidnapped by people and raped. And now you want some of the wedding gifts and the honeymoon money? Are you kidding me? And you want to sue me for $250,000 in punitive damages?
That's so funny.
So John countersued.
Good for him.
Saying that he should receive the money for the emotional distress of being left at the fucking altar.
But he wasn't technically left at the altar, right?
Well, no, but, you know.
So
he sued for the emotional distress of everything she had put him through.
I guess.
But in January of 2007, they both withdrew their lawsuits. 16 years later, in 2021, Jennifer is now living in Gainesville, Georgia, working as an HR director at a telecommunications staffing agency. In 2010, she started dating Greg Hudson. Everywhere I looked, they said a landscaping like owner, so he must be kind of well-known in the landscaping business. I don't know. And they tied the knot, but they did divorce March of 2021. In 2008, John married Shelley Martin in a small ceremony at his parents' house. And that, my friend, is the story of the runaway bride.
Are John and Shelley still together?
As far as I could find.
Okay, that's good.
Yeah.
Aw, at least he got a happy ending.
Yeah, yeah. So the way you were talking, it made me think that you perhaps didn't agree with John's lawsuit.
Like the countersuit?
Yeah.
I said good for him.
Yeah, but then when I said the damages for being left at the altar, you're like, ugh, get over yourself.
Well, yeah. Like, he wasn't left at the altar. He was left a little bit before. But I guess he also thought that the love of his life was murdered in a ditch somewhere.
Yeah.
So I get it. But still, you're a man.
So?
People break up with people all the time. And people leave people all the time at the altar. Not everybody sues that other person.
I agree. However, do people fake their own kidnapping and rape all the time?
Well, he assumed.
No,
oh,
she,
no. She
said.
She did say. I forgot that she was also lying to the police.
Mm-hmm.
I understand the emotional distress she caused him, but I don't think he needed to sue her.
Well, and I don't know that he would have had she not sued him first.
I guess. I don't know.
I don't know. I'm totally on his side.
Yeah, I don't think that she was entitled to any of the money afterwards.
Yeah.
Except maybe the house, because he did trick her into.
Yeah, with putting his own name on it.
Yeah. So, I mean, like.
But I think he deserves it. Like, yeah, like, good for him.
Totally. But now it's like, now she could be emotional distress.
Yeah.
I thought I was going to have a house. What is that? Not a house.
Oh, yeah. So that is a wild story with lots of interesting turnarounds, I guess.
Yeah, that was insane. Thanks.
Yeah. So tell me about your wild ride.
Okay. It's Aimo Koivunen. I'm just going to call him Buddy.
Okay.
Because for some reason, even though the pronunciation of his last name is not terribly difficult.
Sounds difficult.
I'm going to keep saying it with a weird accent, and I don't want to do that. So I'm just going to cut my losses right now.
It's funny. My dad, when he was here, he would call Oliver his buddy boy. He'd be like, buddy boy. And then one time Oliver was mad. He was throwing a fit. And my dad called and said, buddy boy. And Oliver goes, no, buddy boy.
I love that. I love when kids are like that. And it's like, it's literally your name. Like, get over yourself.
Yeah, he got mad the other day when I told him his full name. That's not my name.
Evie calls me Jessica all the time.
Oh my God.
And then dies laughing. You're Jessica. She would look at me and she'd go, Jessica.
That's hilarious.
Like, oh my God, okay. My name's Mummy. No, you're Jessica.
That's really cute.
So Kyle's Jessica occasionally too.
Oh, okay. Perfect.
And apparently we're also Evie at points. So.
Oh, yes, of course. Of course.
Yeah. But she's so cute. She's so funny. She's in the three-nager stage, but.
Oh, yeah.
So we. And she's a redhead. And she's spicy. She's a spicy kid.
I think it's a girl thing because Mara is real spicy too. And
yeah.
My friend Tess, her daughter, is real spicy as well.
It's insane. It's like, get over yourself.
I think it's that we got to be a little bit stronger, you know, to make it through this world as women.
Damn COVID babies. All right. So I got my sources from Daily Mail. All that's interesting. And I'm sure Britannica. I don't know. I don't know anymore. I just go for the ride. Okay. So Finland repelled an invasion by the Soviet Union during World War II. They joined forces with Germany to invade the Soviet Union and then engaged in combat with the Allies against Germany.
Oh, that's crazy.
That's insane. Like, I didn't expect Finland to be like that.
Yeah.
And that turmoil is astoundingly embodied in the meth-fueled survival story of soldier Aimo Koivunen, 27 years old.
Wait, did you say meth-filled?
I did.
Okay.
I did.
Oh, geez.
So, I told you it was a short ride, but it's a fun ride. And I don't know. I don't know how this is even possible, but. Buddy boy. Overdosed on methamphetamine almost fatally while escaping a Soviet attack. He was able to go hundreds of miles thanks to these drugs. They also almost killed him.
Yeah, meth's not one to mess with.
And that's better. On March 18, 1944, a lot of snow coated the ground in Lapland, wherever the fuck that is. Finnish soldiers had been engaged in almost constant combat for more than 4 years, defending their nation.
Oh, wow.
And one Finnish ski patrol was surrounded by Soviets deep behind enemy lines. This silence was broken up by gunfire. Men hurried to get cover. And as the Finnish forces retreated on skis, the ambush became a race for survival. Yeah. Yeah. The Finnish skiers were guided by Aimo across untracked deep snow. It was up to his fellow soldiers to clear the track so they could glide over. Aimo was soon exhausted from this demanding job, and he started to fall behind. And people were just leaving him because, you know.
Wait, he was the leader and he was falling behind?
Yeah, because he had to trek through that snow, like make a path.
Oh, before the people behind him?
Yeah.
Maybe he wouldn't have been as tired if he wasn't all methed out.
Well, he wasn't yet.
Oh, okay.
He wasn't yet.
Oh, okay.
So he remembered that he had a little pill package in his pocket. Actually. Naughty, naughty girl.
I just laughed so hard. Like, oh yeah, I got that meth in my pocket. Totally forgot about that.
The team had been given a ration of Pervitin, which is a stimulant back in Finland. Commanders claimed that soldiers would get an energy boost from these tablets.
Oh, no.
At first, Aimo refused to take the medication. However, his men were facing pretty dire circumstances. So he took the amphetamine out of his pocket.
Oh, no. Well, I mean, I guess it's not as bad as I was first thinking because they gave it to him.
Yeah, but things were a little less kind of cleared through back then.
Yeah.
But that's not even the problem. Okay. He had enough of this Pervitin for his whole team.
Oh,
he
no.
Alone was carrying the quantity for the team. He was still running from the Soviets, pushing through the snow, trying to force a single pill into his throat. But it was hard for him to take just one pill because of the heavy mittens that were designed to keep them warm in those freezing conditions. So instead of pausing, you know, you're running for your life.
Yeah.
To figure out the dosage.
Oh, no.
He ingested 30 pills of pure meth.
Okay, so if I don't know the dosage, I take like maybe two.
You were supposed to take one. I don't even know. Like, I don't even know. But
I would never in my life be like, I don't know the dosage. Let me take 30.
Yeah. And he was like a really straight-laced kid. Like, he did not want to take these drugs.
Why did he take 30?
Because it was an accident. He was running for his life. He's on skis. He has these giant fucking gloves on his hand. Are you really going to be like, I was like running for your life, trying to pour pills. Like, you're not going to watch what the fuck you're doing.
I guess. I can't believe he didn't die. Well, maybe he did. I don't know. Let's finish. Let's hear what happens.
Okay. So 30 pills of straight meth, straight laced kid. So like one of those would have knocked him on his fucking ass.
Yeah.
He started skiing significantly faster.
I bet.
Immediately. And at first, his team kept pace with him. But then they weren't.
I picture him like going real fast with like smoke trailing behind him, you know, like. Yeah.
But the Soviets retreated too because they're like, damn. Boys fast.
Also, I would not want to take on someone that had 30 doses of meth.
Especially after what happens with them.
Oh, God.
Eventually, his own troops lost track of him. But when they caught up, they noticed that he was hallucinating and he was pretty incoherent. His eyesight also became blurry and fuzzy, and he blacked out. And due to their safety concerns, his fellow allies took his ammo from him.
Yeah, that sounds like a good idea.
Except it's not. Later, Amo proceeded to hack through the snow in a blackout condition. So he just pieced the fuck out, needing to get through this snow. His awareness came back the following day.
Oh my God. Can you imagine losing a whole day?
And it was revealed that he had traveled by ski 100 kilometers.
Oh.
And he was all alone.
Oh.
Nobody was with him.
Oh.
While high on meth, he traversed 100 kilometers in the snow. And he was still impaired when he became conscious again. He was alone. His unit had fallen behind. And for him, who had neither food or ammunition, that didn't look very good. So, equipped with this meth-induced energy, some skis, and, you know, all that other shitty crap that's going on, he's like, huh, I might as well just keep going at this point. So he quickly found out that the Soviets were still pursuing him. And on his arduous journey, Amo saw Soviet troops multiple times. At one point, he actually skied towards a camp thinking it was his fellow troops, but it was actually the Soviets.
Oh, no. I wonder if, like, if he didn't have to work so hard and, like, make his body move and like probably sweating it out and stuff like that, if that wouldn't have killed him. I wonder if keeping going, working that hard was kind of what saved him.
Probably.
Yeah.
And it was also fucking cold out.
Yeah.
So, but after I wrote that he skied towards them, thinking it was his friends, I wrote LMAO.
He's like, hey guys. Oh no.
Literally. He's like, oh shit. And then he turned around.
Quick turn around.
He's like, he turns around thinking that they didn't see him. And then whoops.
Whoopsie daisy.
So as he was retreating, he skied over a landmine, which shattered his right foot. And then when he went to leave, the landmine caused a fire, which caused an explosion that threw him 30 feet.
Wow.
And he managed to survive both. This part is where I was starting to get confused. It was it was either it was true or it's not true. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
This man was high on meth, okay? Regardless, he was left hurt and disoriented by the landmine. So as he waited for help, he laid on the ground, fading in and out of consciousness in a ditch. Freezing temperatures would kill him if he did not move quickly. So, meth-fueled, he continued on his skis and continued on his journey.
This is also, like, not only is this meth fueled, but like luck fueled. Like yeah. he's so lucky like 700 times.
Uh-huh. But also remember, his right foot is shattered
yeah.
at this point.
Yeah.
Yeah. Pure adrenaline.
And he got blown across.
And he survived. At another point, he found an abandoned cabin. This part killed me. And he lit a fire in the middle of the room, which is so stupid, dude. He but was sleeping.
In his head, he was like, this is a great idea.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He was sleeping when the fire overtook the building. And he kept getting woken up because the flames kept getting too close.
Oh, God.
So he would just move away a little by little every time the flames got closer and go back to sleep.
I mean, it makes sense, you know?
He eventually had to get out of the building.
Yeah.
So, and he managed to escape that. So.
That's insane.
Yeah. I just giggled. I'm like, just like, so tired. You just roll over.
He's like, oh, fire.
Oh. Get out of here. He eventually regained his appetite as the days went by, but he needed, what?
just like, this whole thing, just being on meth, and he's finally like, oh, you know what? I haven't eaten in 7 days. I'm kind of hungry.
Yeah. But it's true, because his need for food had been muted by the massive dose of meth running through his yeah. body. But ultimately, these hunger pains brought his predicament into sharp contrast. He's like, ah, shit. Shit's getting real. The military had few options in Lapland during the winter. So, gnawing on pine butts, he managed to ward off hunger. He made a broth. And then he caught a Siberian blue... I don't know if it's a blue jay, just a Siberian jay one day, and then he ate it raw.
Oh, what? I thought you were going to say a Siberian tiger. Because I could see a guy high on meth getting a tiger. Although, are they extinct?
I don't know. I don't know. Hmm. But yeah, so that would have been so much better. You wrestled a bear, I wrestled a fucking tiger while high on meth.
Oh my God.
He remembered at one point talking to people back home, spending a night skiing towards what he believed to be a lit cabin on the horizon, but it was actually a star. And he also remembered fighting a wolverine, which turned out to be a tree branch.
One tough tree branch. Oh my gosh, that's hilarious.
That shit almost killed me.
No, dude, I swear it was a wolverine. It had teeth and everything.
Fuck you, bitch. I'm gonna eat your pine buds now. Oh my goodness. This guy's funny. So, obviously, he eventually overcame his meth overdose. Soviet patrols and below freezing weather somehow. And when he finally arrived back in Finnish land, he was literally laying in the ditch in a ditch for a while. Just kind of like defeated at this point.
Yeah.
So some fellow citizens hurried to rescue him. So they had actually left him there being like, yo, we need some help. And then they returned to grab him.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah. He had traveled 400 kilometers, which is 250 miles, by the end of his enlightenment.
So how many days was that he was all methed out?
2 weeks.
What?
2 weeks.
His body didn't get rid of it for 2 weeks?
Uh-huh.
That's yeah. insane.
He weighed only 94 pounds.
Oh my God.
And his starting heartbeat was 200 beats per minute. when it should be around 80. It was learned that he had been missing for 2 weeks, surviving out in the wilderness in below 20 conditions.
Oh my gosh.
He was not, and despite this little thing that happened, he was not the only World War II soldier using performance-enhancing medications.
Yeah.
The Nazi dictatorship also used narcotics like methamphetamine to give its soldiers an edge. And millions of soldiers were given Pervitin by commanders in the final days before the Nazi invasion of France.
Oh.
And this drug was created in 1938 by Temmler Pharmaceuticals, located in Berlin. The pharmaceutical business claimed that the tablet, which was effectively a swallowable type of crystal meth, healed depression.
Oh. Well, Germans were, I mean, temporarily, I guess it does.
Yeah, you black out and forget you're depressed. Yeah,
exactly.
Germans were able to purchase this energy pill over the counter for a while. Then German physician Otto Ranke started experimenting with Pervitin on university students.
Oh, no.
Given the impending war, Ranke recommended that soldiers take Pervitin.
Oh, no.
And I hope you all heard the two different pronunciations of that last name. Because I don't know.
Do you know, was he, like, addicted afterwards?
No.
Oh, good.
The Nazis benefited from this drug incredibly, and it was possible for soldiers to march through the night without any rest.
Oh, my gosh. Not good for you.
No. In the spring of 1940, the Nazis published a stimulant decree eager to employ methamphetamines. 35 million meth dosages were given to the front lines per this edict.
Wow.
And amphetamines were also used by the Allies to prevent weariness during fighting. During the battle, soldiers were kept awake by doses of speed.
Wow.
And to more detailed answer your question, Amo Koivunen was the only soldier to survive a meth overdose behind enemy lines throughout the war, despite the fact that millions of doses of meth and speed were distributed. And he lived into his 70s after surviving the ordeal, having a family of his own.
Good for him.
Yeah. So that is my...
That...
My meth-fueled story.
Absolutely insane.
Uh-huh.
I loved that so much.
Wasn't that wild?
That probably one of my favorite stories I've ever heard. That's hilarious.
It was a kick-ass monster, bitch.
He like hulked out.
He really did, which is great for him. I'm proud of him.
Yeah, he needed it.
Yeah.
Although, had he not taken it, maybe he wouldn't have gotten lost. But then he may have gotten taken by the Soviets, so.
Exactly, because he was falling behind.
Do you know if his team made it?
I don't know.
Oh, okay. I would assume.
I would assume as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, especially because they had a trail mark for him now. They probably were, like, going by, and they saw the trail, like, going off the wrong way, and they're like, oh, God.
There goes Amo.
Just, like, zigzag. Without his
Amo.
Like...
Amo without his Amo.
Oh, poor Amo. Oh, my gosh, that's hilarious.
I can only imagine. All right, I have some jokes.
Yay!
What kind of animal is always at the World Series?
I don't know what.
A bat.
That's so stupid.
But true. Why can't Elsa have a balloon?
Because she... I don't know.
Because she'll let it go.
Ouch.
How does a daddy flower greet his baby?
A mirror petal?
Hey, bud.
I like how much you liked that one.
Well, we were talking about what your dad calls Oliver.
Buddy boy.
Buddy boy. Hey, bud. What is black and white and red all over?
A newspaper.
Yeah. Okay, so we'll end it there because Ashley finally got one.
Yay! Well, if you want more of us lovely ladies, you can find us on Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, and YouTube.
And if you would like to rate and review us, you can do so on Apple Podcasts and Spotify.
Thanks for tuning in, and we look forward to bringing you two new stories next week.
Bye! Bye.